Penguin Random House Audio presents Cry Pilot by Joel Dane. Read for you by David Shee. My story starts with an ambush. A grubby street kid spends months getting close to a Garda squad. He tags along after them, begging for food. He shows them into forgotten courtyards and warns them about local insurgents. In return, the squad medic patches him up after a beating, and the sergeant tries to enroll him in a corporate school with 3 meals a day and a roof over his head. The boy laughs with them. He cries with them. He cares for them. And then, he betrays them. On the orders of the beloved merciless leader of the Patriot Resistance, he leads them into a death trap. The Patriot leader is his grandmother. My grandmother. That boy was me. Those sins are mine. 10 years later, I know there are wrongs you can't right. There are debts you can't pay. You can't stop trying, though. Debts don't disappear because there's nobody left to collect them. They stay on the books, accumulating interest. Chapter 1. When the recruiter calls, I'm delivering a package to a party club on the 117th floor. Urgent music pounds and holographic projections strafe the dancers. I slide through the crowd, complete the delivery, and my cuff chimes. "This is K2, I say.
"Welcome, Maceo K2, an artificial voice says. "Your request for a recruitment interview has been..."
There's a pause during which my heart stops.
"Granted."
"Thank you," I tell the recorded message. "Thank you. I'll..." The connection crashes. It doesn't matter, though. The appointment information is already on my cuff. They expect me in 35 minutes. That's the first test. If you're not willing to drop everything, the corporate military doesn't want you. As I slip toward the exit, my pulse thumps along with the music. A low note creeps up my spine, and then I'm in the bustling, bright corridor. Boutiques and cafes march toward the atrium, with elevators servicing the highest floors of the tower. Chattering families browse the shops, and rowdy kids play wall hockey. Late afternoon in a freehold tower. I grab red bean rolls at a war room and eat in the elevator. A projection on the wall shows the streets outside the tower. Maintenance spots spark, ad boards flicker, and mobile homes cling to the undersides of a tangle of highways. A crowd of kids chases a sweets caravan along a curving track, and a flock of new generation sparrows dives through freight cables. That's all behind me now. The corporate military is in front of me, the recruiter and the future. On the 186th floor, pillars of scarab drones palpate the air. I cross the foyer toward them, and after a fraught pause, they allow me into corporal territory, where the air is fresh and the music is stale. Like embassies in the days of nation-states, different rules apply on the corporate-owned floors of freehold towers. Different laws. That's why I'm here. A massive space opens between the 186th and the 190th floors of the tower. Semi-translucent bubbles slide across rails and ramps and hang from cables like gondolas. Most carry passengers, barely visible in the luxurious interiors. The bubbles split in two when their routes diverge or merge into larger bubbles to form gathering spaces or conference rooms. Light glimmers on the sheen of rounded surfaces, colorful and delicate. I enjoy the sight until my cuff hurries me along. With 3 minutes to spare, I slip inside an empty office with a scented filtration fan. There's no furniture except for a round table with a lily on it. Maybe a lily. Maybe a rose or decorative fungus. Heirloom plants aren't my strength. I cuff messages to my boss and neighbors saying goodbye. I send a longer one to Ioneska, my oldest friend, my first love. I tell her that my apartment is hers now. She's welcome to take whatever she wants and sell the rest. One way or another, I'm not coming back. My heart thumps in my chest. I massage my middle finger, feeling the lump of the bone spur implant, I inhale slowly, but I don't flow myself calm. This isn't a moment for meditative detachment. This is a moment for coiled readiness. The door bulges, and a gawky young man trots into the room. His yellow-black hair is woven through his smart wire, which sways when he walks, giving the impression of a breeze. "Welcome to Shieldgrid," he says. "I'll be your recruiter today." "Nice to meet you, son." "My pleasure." Two sitting bubbles take shape from the wall, and the recruiter lounges on one and gestures invitingly to the other. "Would you please confirm your name?" "Maceo Ketu," I say, standing at ease instead of taking a seat. The lens in his right eye gleams with data. "You were assigned the surname identifier K2SE in a refugee camp after the fall of Villavella?" "Yes, son," I say. "And when you reached your majority, you took K2 instead of your original name, your family name?" "Yes, son," I say. "May I ask why?" "I wanted to leave the war behind, to start fresh, to start again." I suppose Villavella is not anything you'd want to hold on to." He's right, but that doesn't mean Villavella isn't still holding on to me. I bow my head and say, "No, son. You spent a few years in a refugee camp," he says. "Yes, son. Since that time, you've been making deliveries in the coastal Vegas freehold, doing odd jobs for which you are painfully overqualified." "Yes, son." He flashes me an apologetic smile. "I'm starting to worry about your linguistic prowess." "I'm fluent in mainland English," I tell him. "I speak Creole and Bahasa, muddle through with Yoruba and Franco-Vietnamese." "No Portuguese?" "A little." "Refugee children," he touches his flowing hair. "You often come with a flair for languages." "Yes, son." "I've recruited a handful of refugees for various positions over the years." His lens gleams again. "Never into the military." I expected this, but still feel a prickle of frost on my neck. "No, son. The military does not recruit from a war zone, Mark K2. Surely you know this." "Yes, son." "Then what are we doing here?" He cuts off my answer with a gesture. "Your equivalency scores are high despite your... You live in one of the lower levels?" Freehold towers average about 200 stories, with hundreds of suites and studios on every floor. A 250,000 people live in the more densely packed towers, which rise in thick clusters around avenues of bridges and walkways and tram tracks. The top dozen floors are called the penthouse. The middle is the belt, and the bottom floors are the gutter. A roiling mass of music and culture, art and anarchy. "Yes, son," I say. "I'm from the gutter. Making deliveries gives me time to train for the military, to prepare for this interview." "You were raised in a war zone, and you wish to return?"
"I want to serve."
"Why?"
"Because I take a breath and tell a half-truth. "I want to be part of something bigger than myself."
"You want to kill remorts," he says, with a hint of amusement.
"They need killing," I tell him.
Remorts are the reactivated, the reborn, bioweapons of a previous age. And yeah, the corporate forces need to put them down. So I cuff the recruiter my enlistment information, medical records, fitness qualifications, military intake test scores. Years ago, I'd taken a wrong turn onto a one-way street, and now this, joining a Shieldgrid armed forces, is my only exit. I need to get out of the gutter and into the military before there's nothing left to save. I'd started training. I'd read every boot camp manual and watched every embed. I'd spent every spare scrip on a low-jacked combat sim that left me with a bloody nose and a migraine. I climbed the stairways of my tower for 6 hours a day, carrying packages in both directions. I'd even bought an antique Ambo swing-barreled assault rifle. Despite the introduction of cutting-edge BOAS rifles, Ambos remained the baseline military firearm, so I learned that weapon inside and out.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?